All right, I call the meeting of the Ways and Means Committee to order. And note for the record that a quorum is present and that we're ready to begin here. And with that, can I get a motion for approval of the minutes from Monday, February 13th?
So moved.
Representative Freiberg moves the minutes from February 13th. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say nay. The motion prevails and the amendment or the minutes are adopted. So the first bill on the agenda for today is House File 112, which is authored by Representative Fryer. And I did see Fryer here. If you want to make your way up to the testifier table. And as Representative Fryer moves, I will make a motion that House File 112 be re-referred to the General Register. So Representative Fryer, welcome to the committee. Please tell us about your bill.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. This is House File 112. It came forward early in the session because there's a certain amount of urgency to get it passed. And I'll explain that part, too. So back in 2017, we established academic standards for physical education. So that process was completed. They decided at that point it would be reviewed after 5 years because, you know, these new academic standards. But during that time, we did have the delay in them being actually implemented into our schools. And so that was done by this body. It was approved. We delayed starting implementing these standards. And so right now, schools across the state are using these new academic standards for physical education. And so the instructors, the PE teachers across the state, all of those people are just learning what the new standards are. And of course, this idea of assessing whether these are good or not, it's too soon. So all this bill does, it delays it. So instead of being reviewed after 5 years, it'll be reviewed after 10 years. We had a fiscal note, which kind of like some money is saved now, but it'll be spent later on. And if anybody has any questions, I do have a testifier that can address that from Department of Education.
Great. Discussion to House File 112. Any discussion? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one question. Was the fiscal note ready for the Committee of Jurisdiction?
It was heard in the Finance Prior. Committee. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Yes, it was heard in the Finance. Went to Education and Finance was heard.
Further discussion to House File 112. Okay. Seeing none, final word on your bill, Representative Pryor.
Yes, so matter of urgency. In a couple days, actually, the work would start on this, and so that's why we'd like to get to the floor and get it passed. It's also being considered in the other body.
Great. So I renew my motion that House File 112 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. The motion prevails and House File 112 is re-referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Pryor. So the next bill on the agenda for today is House File 366, Representative Agbeje. And being you're on the committee, would you like to motion that House File 366 be re-referred to the General Register?
Yes, Madam Chair, that is my motion.
Awesome. Great. So the bill is in front of us, so please proceed to tell us about your bill, and please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. So I'll just actually go through and do the full presentation of the bill since I know a lot of people have a lot of questions. So I'm here today to present House File 366, which is the Reproductive Freedom Defense Act. What this bill does is it protects Minnesota healthcare providers, Minnesota citizens, and patients from around the country against legal attacks and criminal penalties imposed by anti-abortion extremists in other states. This bill is necessary to protect the rights and access to reproductive health care for all Minnesotans, the health care providers who offer reproductive health services, and those from other states seeking care. The overturning of Roe v. Wade has led to a flood of harmful laws attacking not only abortion rights, but also individual liberties and privacy more broadly. There is a chilling effect on providers about the type of health care they can provide and whether they will be prosecuted for giving patients the reproductive health care that they need. States like Texas, Georgia, Arkansas, Mississippi, Missouri, and Alabama have passed or introduced laws that criminalize abortion with penalties that can include fines, imprisonment, and/or the revocation of medical licenses for the abortion provider. And it is deeply troubling to see laws passed whose sole purpose is to punish people who perform reproductive health care. I'm glad to carry this bill where we can say that we are creating strong protections for Minnesota's own health care providers and citizens against legal attacks and criminal penalties that are being imposed in abortion-restrictive states. This legislation would prevent Minnesota's courts and institutions from being hijacked and abused in service of a harmful agenda from those outside of Minnesota. House File 366 ensures that the law governing the release of health records excludes out-of-state subpoenas and court orders for records when in relation to laws from other states that restrict or punish the provision, receipt, or attempted provision or receipt of reproductive health care services to a patient. This ensures that disclosure laws cannot be weaponized for other states' prosecution of health care that is protected under Minnesota law. This bill also protects physicians, physicians' assistants, and nurses from disciplinary action or not receiving a license solely because they may be coming from another state that has extreme anti-abortion laws targeting health care providers. Further, this bill protects Minnesotans from laws encouraging citizens to sue individuals for providing or helping someone obtain abortion care and allows anyone sued in another state under one of these laws to countersue in Minnesota to recover any costs affiliated with that case. It also ensures that Minnesota courts will not enforce out-of-state judgments for these types of lawsuits. This bill is important to healthcare providers because they are increasingly prone to be prosecuted under radical restrictive laws that are designed to ban abortion outright. These laws are not based in science, and they're not based in healthcare, and they're not letting up. When states restrict access to reproductive care, the burden falls on the patient who needs to access that essential time-sensitive care and providers and clinics in neighboring states who want to support abortion access. Patients deserve privacy, and no one should have their medical history used against them in a lawsuit or legal enforcement. Patients deserve community support from their network when seeking care, and we must protect those who assist patients in accessing abortion. It's the job of healthcare providers to care for their patients, and they're not lawyers. Providers know and follow the law and regulations in our state, but they cannot be expected to understand the different legislation that other states are passing, which have the goal of ultimately affecting how medicine is practiced in Minnesota. It excludes reproductive health care related charges from our Extradition Act so that Minnesota will not deliver a person in charge of the crime of providing abortion or other reproductive care to another state under an extradition order. And finally, this bill protects people from being arrested in Minnesota under other states' outrageous laws. This bill is important to healthcare providers and their patients, both here and around the country. I want to reiterate that for most Minnesotans support protecting abortion access and ensuring access to abortion care. And Minnesota is essentially becoming an island in the upper Midwest to provide abortion and reproductive care. So it is critical that we act to protect patients and providers in Minnesota and those coming from out of state to seek care. And with Madam Chair, I look forward to the conversation.
Thank you, Representative Agbaji. Discussion to House File 366. All right, Representative Garofalo. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just really quickly, I was looking over the fiscal note and I realized that there was no fiscal cost, so there was a fiscal note ordered and it has a whole plethora of agencies that have contributed to the fiscal note. And the first lead agency is the health department. Can you tell me if this fiscal note was ready and prepared for the first committee hearing that was in health?
Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative O'Neill. This fiscal note was ready by the time it made it to its third committee hearing.
Representative O'Neill.
Madam Chair, that's a problem. I mean, literally the lead agency on this fiscal note, which is the health department, it wasn't even available for the health committee. It wasn't available to the committee after that. The two committees after that. And this fiscal note has implications to the health department, the attorney general, Governor's Office, Human Services Department, Medical Practice Board, Nursing Board, and Supreme Court. And it wasn't ready for the first two committees. So I find that incredibly problematic and systemic. This is incredibly systemic in this session. The fiscal notes are not ready for the first committee hearing it should have been ready for. And Madam Chair, I'm going to vote no anyway, but this is a systemic problem with these big, sweeping, ideological bills that are coming forward that they're simply not even following proper procedures, and here is yet another one.
Further discussion. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, going back to the to these fiscal notes as well, on page 6, there's an assumption here that says the Attorney General Office anticipates that this law would prompt a legal challenge, and the office estimates the office will expend legal assistance for that, and yet it says it's zero cost. That seems kind of questioning how that occurs when they already say they have experience granted by defending the challenge of COVID-19. I think that becomes a problematic. And the other piece in regards to just legal status is that we are dealing with citizens of another state that have different governing laws governing them, and we're making the assumption that all states have to abide by our standards, but we don't have to abide by theirs, which again I think is problematic and one of the very reasons why this bill is not ready. It's ready for a no vote. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion. Lead Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the author, to Representative Petersburg's question, was a question I was going to ask. How is there no fiscal cost if we anticipate there's going to be legal challenges?
Representative Agbed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Garofalo and Representative Petersburg. So the Attorney General's Office, as well as a number of agencies, do anticipate that in the general procedure of bills that are passed through the legislature, that there may need to be anticipated costs that they may or may not need to expend. Some of those costs are minimal. Sometimes they're larger. Here, what the Attorney General's Office is saying is that it is part of their preparations for any laws, should they need to defend them.
Representative Rockwell.
So, stop. Sorry. So there is a cost or there is not a cost?
Representative Agbeje.
Thank you, Madam Chair. According to the fiscal note, there is not a cost.
And Madam Chair, and to the author, with regards to the language we see in Section 2 of the bill, I just want to make sure that all members of the committee are aware of this. So was there any sort of, is there any exception for minor children or young girls under the age of 18, young women under the age of 18? Are there any exceptions for those? Or is this, this is everything, there are no exceptions to those?
Representative Agbeje.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, this bill focuses on providers, most more importantly, and then in terms of patients who have come to Minnesota seeking care or patients who are in Minnesota. For those patients, this bill basically says for those who have had conversations with their doctors, should the reproductive care that they are seeking be pertinent to what their needs are, them and their doctors are making those decisions.
So, Madam Chair and Representative, I just wanted Section 2 here just so every member of the committee knows what this is. Section 2 of this bill would prohibit Minnesota health-related licensing boards from taking adverse actions against applicants and licensees who have been disciplined or criminally convicted for providing or assisting reproductive health care services in other jurisdictions in a matter that would be unlawful in Minnesota. So there are restrictions and, I would say, protections in place for young girls in other states. Would that then prohibit these licensing boards, people who have violated those laws in other states, from being enforced here in Minnesota?
Representative Agbeje.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What the bill does is it protects providers in Minnesota, and for those other providers who are coming to Minnesota if they want to receive a license, only on the grounds that they are providing reproductive health care that is lawful in Minnesota. So if, as long as they're providing reproductive health care that is lawful in Minnesota, they can receive their license and there won't be an adverse situation with that. So, I'll just leave it at that for right now.
Okay, so
thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author then. So just to clarify then, in those states that have jurisdictions that have laws that protect minor children, measures that are taken to prevent human trafficking, measures to make sure that victims of sexual abuse are not being exploited by the rapists. In situations where doctors were facilitating this or participating in this and breaking laws in those jurisdictions, we would not be able to consider that in the state of Minnesota. So I'll be voting no on this for this and other reasons. Madam Chair, please do not confuse the lack of debate on this bill as being simply emblematic of how much members of this side of the aisle are opposed to this bill. Thank you.
Further discussion? To the author of the bill for the last word, Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will just kind of leave with this. We are in an unprecedented situation right now with what the Supreme Court has done. And so a number of states are taking actions where they're trying to reach into other states to enforce their own laws on other states. And I think that what Minnesota is doing, along with a number of other states, is to try to protect their patients, their providers, their health care, to ensure that people can seek the health care that they need. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, Representative Agbaje renews her motion that House File 366 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay.
No.
The motion prevails and House File 366 has been re-referred to the General Register. Thank you. The next bill on the calendar for the day is House File 669, Representative Lee. Welcome to the committee. Good to see you. Thanks for hanging out with us this evening. And I will have Representative Lilly, would you like to move House File 669 be re-referred to the General Register?
Happy to move that, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. And there is an author's amendment to the bill and an oral amendment. Is that correct, Representative Lee?
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Okay. Would you like to move those first and get the bill in the shape you would like for discussion tonight?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. So I will move the A4 amendment, and we have the oral amendment. I'm going to move the adoption of the A4 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. The motion prevails and the A4 amendment is adopted. And there's an oral amendment to the A4, and I can turn to Mr. Sullivan to explain that oral amendment.
Madam Chair and members, the oral amendment is to the limit on debt service for the fiscal year 24-25 biennium, and that's found on page 37. of House File 669, specifically on line 10. So the change is to delete the limit, the debt service limit of $1,188,684,000 and insert $1,179,723,000.
Thank you. Mr. Sullivan, any question or discussion to this? And just to clarify, this came because of the February forecast today that staff had noted this change was needed to be consistent with what we had in the February forecast today. So any discussion to the oral amendment? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. Oral amendment is adopted. So I believe we have the bill in the shape you would like to discuss it, Chair Lee, so please proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. So House File 669 will be the General Obligation Bonds Capital Investment Bill. I have Mr. Andy Lee here who can come and talk about the cost for debt service and having walked through the debt service capital budget tracking sheet. And members, I do want to note that in your packet, we do have a 2023 capital budget a spreadsheet that has both the GO bill, the House File 669, and then the General Fund Bill, House File 670, the first engrossment, both next to each other, so that it will be easier for all of us to track as we have this conversation.
Thank you. Mr. Lee, welcome to the committee. Please proceed.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Andrew Lee from House Fiscal Staff. In your packets should be a single page spreadsheet that looks like this. This shows the base capital investment spending for debt service and the proposed changes in House File 669 and 670. on starting on line 5 is the base general fund debt service, and then going through line 30 is all of the base debt service appropriations and one-time capital projects. So none of this is anything proposed. It's just the base, and then the changes start on line 36. So for House File 669, the increase over base debt service for the 24-25 biennium, you can see on line 38 at $39.8 million for the 24-25 biennium and $98 million for the 26-27 biennium. Then there is a one-time general fund appropriation in House File 669, and you can see that on line 40 at $4.8 million. Then on line 41 are the one-time general fund expenditures in House File 670 at $393.3 million. And then on line 42 are $1.1 million in cancellations from the general fund. So the net total general fund for both bills is $397 million. And so you can see the total increase from base on line 45 at $436 million in the 24-25 biennium and $98 million in the 26-27 biennium. And that's the debt service sheet.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Discussion to House File 669. Representatives.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is just more of a general question to House staff there, Mr. Lee. Since the onset of what we're experiencing with the Biden walls inflation, what's happened to the bond market as far as interest rates?
I'm going to definitely confuse Representative Lee and Mr. Lee at some point tonight. Mr. Lee.
Just a moment. Madam Chair and Representative Scott, the assumed interest rates for as of the November forecast for 2023 are 4.45% in 2023 and then 3.95% in 24, 25, and 26. So that's the amount that MMB through IHS assumes the state will be selling its debt for. And I have a history of interest rates if you're interested in hearing that.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was going to be my next question. What was it? What were the interest rates in the prior, 5 or 6 years?
Certainly, Madam Chair and Representative Scott, in the 2022 bond sale, it was about 3%. In the 21 bond sale, it was about 1.7%. In the 2020 bond sale, it was about 1.6%, 1.2 to 1.6. And then in the 2019 bond sale, it was about 2.2%. So there's, that's about the range.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if you know, Mr. Lee, thank you for coming prepared for those numbers. If you know, on $5 million, the difference in interest rate from one biennium to the next, let's take the year that it was 2.1, I think you said, and you probably can't do the math off the top of your head, but compare what the state of Minnesota, the taxpayers in Minnesota were paying on 2.1% interest versus what the going rate this time is going to be.
Mr. Lee.
Madam Chair and Representative Scott, I will have to get back to you on that one, unfortunately. I'd have to run a calculation for
and
that.
Maybe it's easier just to do it on a flat $1 million and figure it out that way, but I'm interested in that.
I know. Further discussion. Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative Lee, I quick question, in given today's budget forecast, why borrow the money when we have it in the checkbook?
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question. I think that's a discussion for us to have at the legislature on, what should we be doing going forward. I know that right now with the state of Minnesota. Unfortunately, I think to represent Scott's point, we couldn't take advantage of the low interest rate over the last few years. But a lot of these projects are going to last longer than our lifetime here. And, you know, a traditional, I think, time frame for a bonded project is around, I think, 125% or so of the life of the bonds. And so we want to ensure that going forward, you know, we're not just paying it one time right now, but that the communities who are going to be impacted by the projects that we're financing actually are contributing to the projects as we move forward. And so that's, you know, one of the reasons why I believe that, you know, we should have an influx of a bonding bill, you know, through the traditional GO bonding and borrowing route, and also have what we have here, the cash, to help out those communities that are not able to, because of the public ownership issue, because of the Constitution, that cannot take advantage of GO. So that's why we're proposing using general fund cash.
Representative Farr.
Thank you. Again, I struggle with that. And just to put it in perspective for Minnesotans, so if you're going to buy a $62.50 ticket, whatever it is, widget, and you have $1,000 in your checkbook, would you borrow money to buy a $62.50 widget when you have $1,000 in your checkbook? Doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know anyone that would do that. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to try to use a different mic. Maybe this one works. So I was looking through the list, Representative Lee, and you had talked about the communities that are impacted. And, you know, maybe I'm missing something, but to me it looks like all of the representation for those communities are all Democrats and there are no Republican communities. Am I missing something, Representative Lee?
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative O'Neill, for the question. Yes, so what's reflective in the spreadsheet right now only have, you know, Democratic members' projects. And we do have two line items right now, if I could find it real quickly here. Line 32 and line 33, we have placeholder for GOP projects to come in. You know, and working with the minority caucuses here in the House and also with the Senate, we have decided to split evenly among all four caucuses the set-aside pot for local projects. And so, you know, what we have here is reflected on the DFL majority and Senate majority, and we're hopeful that Representative Erdahl and the House minority can bring in House GOP projects and vice versa for the Senate GOP to bring in their projects too, so that we could have a bonding bill that's reflective of the entire state, not just DFL projects. So I really appreciate you highlighting that right now.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm just curious, maybe this is more of a Madam Chair question, if we are not ready for this bill to go to the floor, that's the next stop. So I'm curious as to why this bill that's very, very incomplete would be coming to us at this moment. I don't know if you have an answer to that, Madam Chair, but it seems a little bit out of step with how we should be doing things.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. And I'll have Representative Lee. We did waive amendment deadline, and I know we had communication with the minority caucus that we would have welcomed an amendment today with those projects, and I think that invitation still stands, and I will defer to Representative Lee to talk more about that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative O'Neill, to the question, I think that there's have been plenty of opportunity for the House Minority Caucus and the Senate Minority Caucus to bring in their local projects. When we were putting this together with Representative Erdahl throughout the when we started session all the way until we revealed this publicly, I think two, three weeks ago. And then when we had the full week of public testimony and markup, we asked Representative Erdahl to see if there's any GOP project that he was going to bring for us. And then throughout the process, you know, it was communicated that we might have an amendment from the House Minority in Ways and Means. And then now we don't have any, and I think the communications to me is that the House Minority is going to bring in their projects on the floor. And so I think from my perspective as chair of the committee that, you know, we have offered plenty of opportunities for the minority caucus to bring in their projects, but to this point, we don't know what are parts of the minority caucus's priority, and I'm hopeful that as we move forward to the floor that we will see something that's reflected of, you know, the minority caucus.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, we just had the February forecast, which shows that we still have a massive surplus, and yet we're going to borrow, I think it's $1.5 billion more. It's just kind of confounding, and there's no Republican projects in here. I don't really understand why this is here right now. I don't know why we couldn't just put the brakes on, have a pause, get things together. We're in the first year of the biennium. Typically, we do this in the second year of the biennium. We should be working fully on budget. We've been doing all kinds of things that are not budgetary. So I'm very, very confused at this session for so many reasons. We don't have fiscal notes that are not prepared for the first fiscal committee of jurisdiction. We are just upending this whole process, and I don't understand the reason. So just like the last bill that I didn't get a chance to speak on because my mic wasn't working apparently, the fiscal note on that bill wasn't prepared until the third committee hearing, the third fiscal committee. It wasn't there in the first committee. It wasn't there in the second fiscal committee. It was there on the third fiscal committee. So I don't understand what we're doing. I don't know why this bill is here right now. It has no Republican projects in it. We are borrowing $1.5 billion more. We have ample, nearly $18 billion in surplus. I don't know what we're doing. I really don't.
Representative Lee.
Madam Chair, I think to the point of why is this in front of us, I think I could offer that in 2021 and 2022, we did not get any bonding bill done. And so what we're proposing right now is the 2022 bonding bill so that we could get it done and over with finally after 2-3 years and then move forward toward 23 in May and also for 2024. And just to provide the committee a perspective, you know, in 2021, when the state of Minnesota went to solicit projects, capital budget requests from state agencies total roughly $4.2 billion and from local governments $1.2 billion. And so around $5.6 billion worth of projects that's going to increase, and we have seen that increase with projects because of inflation of roughly 20%. And so whether we do it now or in May, projects are going to go for, you know, are going to increase in cost, and I think that it's prudent for us at the state for, you know, failing to do a bonding bill the last 2 years that we move forward with this one and then, you know, work towards a 23 bonding bill this year and a 2024 bonding bill next year.
Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair Lee, this is for you, if you don't mind. So as I understand what you're saying, and I just want to make sure that I'm clear, you have repeatedly asked the minority in the Senate and the minority in the House for bonding projects. Is that correct?
Representative Lee.
Madam Chair, Representative Cleavorn, yes, that is correct. You know, when we started session, we have been working and meeting constantly with all four caucuses to make sure that their projects are reflected in any bonding bill that we're going to release. And up to the point where we release it publicly for the committee, we have heard the commitment from the Republican lead that they're going to bring in their projects, whether that's in Ways and Means or on the floor. And so I'm hopeful that, you know, if we don't see it here, that we see it on the floor.
Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair Lee, so in looking at these numbers on line 32 and 33, you are saying that these are placeholders so that if the Republican or the minority party does decide to bring projects forward, their priorities would not be ruled out of order. Is that correct?
Representative Lee, I don't think he could speak to something being ruled out of order or not. And that would be the chair's prerogative.
Yes, thank you.
But Representative Lee can speak to where the placeholder is.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yes, so line 32 for the GO, we have 94 in there. Of the 94, 90 million is set aside for the minority caucuses in the House and the Senate. And then line 133 under the general fund column 185, that's the entirety for the minority caucuses here in the House and the Senate.
Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you. And this will be my last question, Madam Chair. I'm sorry to have my back to you. So, Chair Lee, what I'm hearing, and I would just like verification, yes or no, what I'm hearing is that you are welcoming Republican projects. You're asking for Republican projects, but you are going to be moving this bill forward. Is that correct?
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, you know, we want to ensure that this bill is reflected of the entire state, and so I'm looking forward to working with the committee members here and Representative Erdahl, the lead on the committee, to bring in GOP projects.
Thank you very much.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My mic's going. Is that going?
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair Lee, for bringing this forward. I just, I got a little rattled as I'm listening to the question by Representative O'Neill, because when I look at your bill, I just started going through it, and there's an amazing amount of projects that are across party lines. And, you know, just starting off with, like, our higher ed institutions are, you know, that's not really cut and dry of whose institutions they are. But if I go through, like, a list, you know, Pine Tech, Vermilion, Central Lakes, Northland, I don't know the districts, but I'm guessing that they might be GOP. I don't know. And then the dam, you know, the door, or like library grants all over the state, you know, where are they going? There's just tons of projects all over the state. You know, the DNR, those projects, you know, a course and trails, you go through the trail list, and, you know, even in the Metro Council Parks and Trails Fund, that doesn't just go in Democrat districts, that's going into everybody's districts, and local road replacement. I mean, I don't want to get into it all, but it's just kind of, if you actually look at the bill, there's really amazing amount of stuff all across party line. Agricultural funds, you know, unfortunately, I don't have any farms left in my district, but, you know, capital complex, like whose is that exactly? I mean, it's for all of us. It's, you know, state operation of emergency, you know, Carver County. I don't know if that's a representative sitting across from me, but I'm guessing it's not my district. Local roads, bridges, safe routes to school, active living, Greater Minnesota Transit Capital, Plymouth. I don't know who has Plymouth. I'm not naming names, but right here. Do you have it all?
No, that's actually not in mine.
Okay. But I know there's you get a little mad when you're on the committee, because you did an amazing amount of work going all over the state, and being a member of your committee has been such an honor. But, you know, we were in everybody's district from, I don't know how many days, 18 days, 16 days. It's an incredible amount that you did and our staff and your staff, quite honestly. So you get a little sensitive when you hear this, you know, and it's last year's bill, which we didn't pass. And there's just amazing, you know, housing from Greater Minnesota. That's, you know, please look at the bill. There's amazing things in there for your side of the aisle. So to say that we're not making an effort to pass a good bill, and I don't even know how many hearings, you know, was there 500? I mean, literally it was 300 at least, and you can speak to that. But I mean, I just want to thank you for all your work, and it always disappoints me as a legislator, you know, when you guys have had bills, I voted for them, and we have them, and I just think it's important. It's really sad we didn't pass this last time, and we have the money, yes, and maybe it ends up being cash. I don't know, but it really shouldn't be that way. We're investing in a lot of, it's not exciting stuff. It's like things that we should do as good stewards of our state. Roofs on college campuses, for goodness sakes, DNR buildings, and on. It's, anyways, thank you, Chair Lee, and I'm sorry I'm a little oversensitive, but it's like, anyways, that's it.
Further discussion. Lead Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lee, my colleague kind of asked this, but I wanted to take a different crack at it. So why are we borrowing money to pay for this instead of paying cash?
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Garofalo. I think that, you know, for me, we have an opportunity to stretch our dollars, you know, whether that's borrowing or using cash. And like I mentioned before, this is to address the bills that we did not have completed in 21 and 22. And also, you know, to Representative Lilly's point, this is a framework that we were working off of last year. And, you know, what we have before us, the $1.32 billion of the statewide projects, you know, we actually negotiated with Representative Erdahl to get it to this point. And I, you know, if we want to do a cash bill, we can move forward and just do a cash bill without any GOP support. And that's not what I want to do. I want to make sure that, you know, with the 14 days of traveling that we have done over the last 2 years, that we have a bill that's actually reflective of the entire state. And so that's why, you know, we should be working with the minority caucus to, one, borrow, and also, two, you know, with the forecasted surplus that we have today, have discussion on how we're going to spend that going forward. And so I think that with the great needs that we have in the entire state, you know, it was 5.6 before, and with inflation and with new requests that's coming in, the cost of these projects are going to go forward. And so, you know, for me, it's using the dollars and you're stretching what we can do through borrowing and also with the forecast that we have today.
So, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Lee. So why can't you work with Republicans on a cash bill?
Representative Lee.
Representative Garofalo, and that's what we're doing. And that's why, you know, what we have in this proposal right now, we are working with Representative Erdahl to make sure that's reflected of what we have here. And, you know, in the future cash bill, it is still my intent to work with Representative Erdahl and the Republicans to make sure that we have a bonding bill that's reflective of the entire state.
So, Madam Chair, Representative Lee, this is the mother of all circular references. I asked you why you have to borrow the bill, and you said, well, because we want to have Republicans at the table. It's okay, we'll work with Republicans on a cash bill. Well, we are doing that. So we come back to the original question. Why are we borrowing money when the state has so much money? What the bill in front of us is going to waste, and that is wasting, $130 million on interest payments. I mean, it's $130 million we're not using for health care, education, the environment, tax cuts, rebates, school safety officers. The DFL has a long tradition of when we had large surpluses of saying, you know, a good use of one-time money is instead of borrowing, we're going to use cash for capital projects. This, I mean, this is something the DFL has historically done. So why are, with the unprecedented amount of federal resources or the amount of resources we have in our state's coffers, why are we borrowing money when we can pay cash?
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo. This is where we at the legislature gets to decide, you know, how we want to, you know, spend the surplus that we have. And I'm here before you with capital projects. And, you know, if we want to spend, you know, all the one-time funding on capital projects, that's the discussions for us to have. But before us right now is that we're trying to complete the bill from 21 and 22 before us. And so that's why we're working, you know, under those conditions so that we could get this through and so we could start working on a bill for 2024. And if we decide to do all general fund cash, then we could do so then. But, you know, this is what we have before us to complete 2022.
So, Madam Chair, Representative Lee, I'm getting a little frustrated, not a lot, just a little. Maybe I'm hungry. Maybe I should offer you a cookie. Would you like a cookie? That'll help. But it's not like you're a passive participant in this process who's like, whoa, this bill came before us. We have to vote on this today. I mean, this is your bill. You're the chief author, and you're bringing it to us. And you're choosing, regardless of the merit of the projects that are in there and the Republican, Democrat capital investment, you're choosing to spend money on interest on debt when you don't have to. And every dollar that we put into interest on debt, there's no bigger form of wasteful government spending than interest on debt. And that's not... It's just not smart. You're smart. I'm not saying you're not smart. You're smart. But spending interest – so I'm just going to – I want to take it – like, why? What is – it's not like there's a scarcity of resources here. What is the driving factor for borrowing money when we have cash?
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Garofalo, like I mentioned before, this is the framework of the 2021 and 2020 bonding bill that we did not get done. And so we should, you know, as a legislature, work to complete what we did not get finished in 2022 and move forward. And whether that's, you know, our choice of if we want to bond for more, because we still have the capacity to bond for more, or to use all general fund cash to move forward. I think that's a discussion for us to have as we move forward in the process.
Lee Garofalo.
So, Madam Chair and Representative Lee, if this is the framework of last year's bill, why aren't we just passing that bill? Why do we have... $94 million for library construction grants in the bill.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At the $94 million in there, you know, like I mentioned, Representative Garofalo was to set aside for the House minority and the Senate minority to bring in their projects. And last year, you know, we agreed that we're going to split evenly the local projects to ensure that the bonding bill that we get through is reflective of the entire state and not just the majority caucuses.
So, Madam Chair, Representative Lee, so it is a different bill than last year.
Representative Garofalo.
It is a different bill than last year, though.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Garofalo, it is the same framework from last year's.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, members, and I want to be clear, speak for myself, don't speak for all Republicans, okay? But It is insane that we are borrowing money with over $10 billion in cash in our state's coffers. I understand that by borrowing for these projects, it gives the opportunity for the DFL to spend even more money, but we've heard from the author himself, it's not like this is the end of it. This is the beginning. There's going to be another borrowing bill coming forward. More interest on debt at a time when we have unprecedented cash reserves in our state. And I would think that while we have different opinions on the size and scope of government, I would think there would be some DFLers who would recognize that there is no more of a wasteful form of spending than interest on debt. And we are unnecessarily spending $130 million in interest on debt. And that's money that could be going to really helping Minnesotans. We could be paying cash for these projects. We could easily be doing it, and it wouldn't even make a dent in the size of the budget surplus. So as the discussions go forward, we'll have the other chamber will be involved. I'm voting no. I would really encourage my colleagues to vote no as well. And I would hope that we have some semblance of fiscal discipline and we do not adopt the Washington, D.C. Spending habits of borrowing and spending. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Seeing no discussion, I'll go to Representative Lee to close us out on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Like I mentioned, you know, this is to address the backlog of needs that we have in the entire state. And of all the bills that has been referred to our committee, roughly it's split half and half of, you know, Democratic projects, Republican projects. And so I'm hopeful that we could move these two proposals forward so that we could start working towards a 2023 bill.
Thank you, Representative Lee. And with that, Representative Lilly renews his motion that House File 669, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails, and House File 669, as amended, has been re-referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Lee. And you also have the last bill on the calendar for today, which is House File 670. And with that, I will have Representative Lilly. Would you like to make a motion that House File 670 be re-referred to the General Register?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is my motion.
Thank you very much, Representative Lilly. And there is an author's amendment. We have two author's amendments. And should we take those up before we get to get the bill in the shape you'd like?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. So with that, I will move the A3 or 4 first. Let's see. I'm going to move the A3 amendment. Okay. And then, so first we'll move the A3 amendment. Do you want to discuss the amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. So the A3 amendment, let me see if I have my notes in front of me.
Representative Lee, should we do that? And then the A4 and then just adopt both of those together being the okay. So why don't we move the A3 amendment? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay. We all had the pause for a second. Owen was just making sure we make all of our motions correctly. So we move the A3 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. So now we have the A4 amendment to the A3 amendment. All those in favor of the A4 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the A4 amendment to the A3 is adopted. So now we have the amendment as amended before us. If you could please discuss your A3 as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the A3 as amended, we on line 1.12 to 1.15, we're just adding the prevailing wage requirements to the preamble of the bill. This is already standard for GO bills, and so just want to make sure that general fund projects have that. And so the A4 amendment that we just amended on from line 1.16 to 1.11 is clarifying language for DLI when they go enforce the prevailing wage. And then line 1.12 to 1.15 of the A4 amendment is the full funding requirement for capital projects. And so that's why we have that there. And then line 1.16 of the A3 amendment updates the flood hazard mitigation appropriation amount. Line 1.17 to 1.18 delete appropriations that were moved from this bill to House File 669. And then line 1.19 to 1.12 update updates the project description of the 30,000 feet project that's in the bill, and then line 1.13 to 1.124 adds an appropriation for the Norway House project.
Great, thank you. We're just double checking with staff. I did do all the correct motions to have the amendment as amended on the bill, so hold the line on that. We are good. So we've actually adopted the amendment to the bill, so you can also proceed with your discussion of the bill. Thank you, Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. So House File 670 is the general fund bill for the capital investment. And so as you can see, and Mr. Lee already talked about through the debt service, we also have the House File 670 first engrossment line on a spreadsheet so that you could take a look at what's funded in there. And just a reminder for the committee, the line 133, the $185 million for library construction grants that's set aside for the minority caucuses to bring in their local projects.
Thank you, Representative Lee, for describing your bill and your amendment. Discussion to the bill. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Lee, I'm a little confused because we have this bill before us, and then tomorrow in my Judiciary Committee, we have a bill for a child advocacy center in Duluth. Is that part of this bill or the previous one that we looked at? Because it's for $1.5 million, and I'm just wondering why that wouldn't be included in either one of these bills, or is that for the next round of bonding that you're planning to do?
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Scott. I'm not aware of the project that you're referring to, and so I don't know if it's for programming or if it's for capital projects, but that has not been raised for my radar, and so I can't really speak to the merit of that, whether that should be included in this proposal or future bonding bill.
Representative Scott.
Thank you.
Further discussion to the bill. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering, Representative Lee, the A4 that we adopted, you've added prevailing wage language, which I've seen kind of all over the board in different committees. And I'm just wondering, how does that change the fiscal impact of this bill?
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill. So we have not have a fiscal note on this or if there's going to be any fiscal impact, but I would say that currently right now, as it stands, GO-funded projects do have to have prevailing wage, and so I'm trying to make sure that whatever projects that we fund in general fund actually have the same standards as the GO, and so that's why we're putting in prevailing wage in here to make sure that it covers.
Representative O'Neill.
Okay, so we don't know the fiscal impact. I did notice also on page 10 of the spreadsheet, there's a couple dozen nonprofit organizations listed, which is, I'm sure, why you're using cash for that. And I'm wondering how many of these unlisted on page 10 of the spreadsheet are brand new nonprofits that we've not supported in the past, and do we have something embedded into this bill to look at how they spent the money, reports back, 990s, looking at their board of directors and so on with these different organizations so that we don't have any issues with fraud.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for the question. So these bills that we have included in here on page 10 that you're referring to have had some public hearing over the last 2 years, and so that's why they're in consideration for this proposal as we move forward. Regarding doing the background checks, we have implemented, at least, for myself and Chair Papp is over there, that we ask nonprofits who are seeking funding to provide us with at their 990s, their IRS 501c3 status, the registration with the Attorney General to make sure that they are, in good standing and could actually take on public dollars too.
Representative O'Neill.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, right, but as they're expending the money and so that there's checks and balances and checks on the money being spent. I get the 990 part because that's money that they've already been entrusted with, but I'm talking about the money, the $8 million here, the $3 million, the $12 million, those dollars being spent.
Representative Lee.
Madam Chair and Representative, so I would say consider this unique and bonding that, you know, even in what we put in on the A4 line 1.12 to 1.15, Minnesota statute 68.502, that if you do not show MMB that you have full funding for the projects, the state is not going to release the money to you. And so for any project that we're going to fund, whether that's nonprofit or local units of government, they need to show that they have the full funding in place before the state will release the money for them. And so if we have a nonprofit that's before us that's problematic, that they can't show that they could fully fund the projects that they're asking the state to fund for, then MMB will not release the money to them.
Representative O'Neill.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm going to try this again. Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I get that. I used to work in nonprofits 20 years. I get that. What I'm asking you is, once that money has been allocated, once that money has been released, and they start to build things, is there checks and balances embedded in this bill so that we know that they're spending it for the appropriation that it was intended for? And what is that check and balance?
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so for the nonprofits, they have to enter into grant agreements with the state agencies that, you know, they're put under. So these that we have on here are under the under DEED. And so DEED will have to enter into individual grant agreements with these. And, Madam Chair, I could provide more information about these grant agreements to all the members of the committee. MMB have a capital grants manual that they provide for folks that's available to the public. And so we can make sure to share that with everyone so that you understand the process of when we appropriate the funding that's, you know, actually signed into law, what is the process for them before they could actually receive the money to proceed with the capital projects.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. Okay, so I think I'm understanding that DEED will be the financial response, though it's their financial responsibility to make sure that these funds are expended as they've been intended. And maybe the state auditor, I'm not sure how far the state auditor's purview goes. I know they do counties and cities and others. So I just want to make sure that we aren't expending out $12 million and nobody's checking to make sure that things are being spent the way they've been told to spend them. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion to House File 670. Lee Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lee, specifically on the grant section, should we be concerned about the lack of geographic diversity in the allocation of these grants?
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Garofalo. I'm hopeful that, you know, my friend, when Representative Erdahl brings in the projects for the minority caucuses, that we will have more geographic balance in the proposal.
Lee Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And is it your understanding that Representative Erdahl is going to be bringing forward grants for nonprofits as part of his list of items?
Representative Lee.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Garofalo. If I, you know, said that, I, you know, must have misspoken. And so I know that Representative Garofalo will be, you know, Representative Erdahl will be bringing projects forward, whether that's for nonprofits or for local units of government. That's to be determined. And I would note, Madam Chair, that of the bonding bills that has been introduced, you know, for nonprofits, is not just here in the seven county metro area, but it's across the entire state too. And so, you know, nonprofit requests are not just here, it's throughout the entire state.
Madam Chair, Representative
Garofalo.
Just in closing here. So on a serious note, there is an unprecedented amount of resources flowing to nonprofits as part of capital projects. And there to say that there's that the nonprofit business sector in Minneapolis and St. Paul has been a growth industry is an understatement. These capital projects, do they fully fund their requests, or are these down payments on what will be further capital requests going forward?
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for the question. And so when we are considering these projects, we're not fully funding these projects. And I have, you know, in my conversation with the authors and the projects, that some of them, you know, they already have their capital campaigns already. And so sometimes we're putting up half, similar to how we would consider for local units of government, or a little bit more than half or a little bit less than half, depending on where they are at with their capital projects. And, you know, we do ask them, you know, if we cannot fully fund the request that you have in front of us, can we get you started so that you could, you know, start working on your capital campaigns to fundraise the rest of this? And so really depends, Representative Garofalo, on a case-by-case basis with these projects. We're not fully funding any of these projects that's in front of us here today.
Representative Greffel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Lee. So it would be fair to say that this is a down payment for future capital requests for the nonprofit sector. Is that a fair statement?
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Greffel. Like I've said, you know, we are in the conversation that I've been having, and I'm making it clear what these nonprofits that are coming before us, that I don't think that the state should be investing in them multiple times. And so, you know, it is my hope that we could get them going so that they could start their capital campaigns to attract, you know, outside dollars, whether that's from other local units of government or from, you know, the private side, so that they could actually get those dollars and get the project going forward.
Representative Bracklow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be voting no on this bill and would encourage others to do so. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Lee, final words on House File 670.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I really appreciate the conversation that we're having here. I look forward to earning all of your support.
Thank you, Representative Lee, for all your work on all things bonding over the last few years. And with that, Representative Lilly renews his motion that House File 670, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails and House File 670 is, as amended, is re-referred to the General Register. And reminder that our next meeting will be 8:30 this Wednesday for the forecast overview, and it's a joint hearing with the Senate. We will be in the Senate room, and there is a little bit of limited capacity, so if you were contemplating if you'd prefer to be on Zoom for that, please let Owen or Leah know so we can make sure we accommodate everyone, but we'll make room for anybody who does come. And we won't be taking any official action that day either, so if you are on Zoom, you can still participate with questions and do whatever else we will be doing during that discussion overview presentation. And we'll likely have a hearing during our next meeting time, our normal meeting time next Monday. And with that, we are adjourned.